Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today we have the return of Mythic Atlantis as a monthly show. 2 years, 6 years and 2 weeks ago, we had our first podcast episode, and Nick Curto, who's our guest today, was on that podcast episode as well. So it's only fit that we start the cycle anew with him. And I'm going to start by reading one of my more published articles. It's appeared in a lot of different magazines and websites. And this, too, mirrors some thoughts that Nick had recently shared. So we're on the same page. Caught up in our daily schedules and familiar routines, we often fail to appreciate that we are living in wondrous times and that our technology gives us abilities previously reserved for mythical beings in ancient tales. We are no longer impressed with the sheer awesomeness of our ability to fly anywhere in the world or converse with people who are actually very far away, nor do we give a second thought to summoning obscure information by manipulating our fingertips or conjuring images of events from distant places or from times long past and viewing them on polished glass plates bathed in light. The fabled Atlanteans of old would be jealous of the everyday magics we so casually command, though to us they've become mundane and commonplace. As an educator in these legendary times, I've seen the magic of technology permeate and transform all aspects of my profession, adding dimensions heretofore undreamed of almost everything I do. My classroom instruction, continued learning, record keeping, and communications are all facilitated by electronic devices that interact with each other through invisible networks. It is the challenge of our age to maintain the human touch in a world made increasingly smaller by miracle machines. I'm fascinated with exploring the potential uses of emerging technologies in meeting timeless human needs, and I delight in finding new ways of utilizing existing technologies to help my students attain even greater levels of success. I'm an artist at heart, so I welcome this challenge as an opportunity to master an ever-evolving medium and exercise my creativity. Some of my favorite and most satisfying experiments have involved creative online communities. These communities can be generated freely through social media. Each will give you the tools you need to design something suitable to the needs of your group. With the ability to casually transcend the restrictions of time and space, these communities have allowed us to share resources and information about anything from improving literacy to obtaining employment or a GED. Students unable to attend due to illness can still interact with their peers, complete assignments, and contribute to the class. There's a built-in peer support component for everyone participating, and by allowing students to access the online tools, they too can exercise their creativity in evolving the group to better meet everyone's needs. And the group is there 24/7 for anyone with access to a computer. Though the technology allows for distant interactions and the storage of content, online communities remain human gatherings focused on a common interest. I've seen real friendships develop as students shared their struggles and successes online, and I've seen the love of learning and the thrill of accomplishment eventually emerge in the postings of those most resistant to participating. Yes, we live in wondrous times, challenging times, interesting times, times of rapid change and great upheaval. We should truly appreciate this and be grateful for it. And as educators, we are fortunate to be in the thick of things, actively helping to shape the future where amazing gadgetry helps us to better connect, expand our horizons, and actualize our potential as human beings. Like I said, this was one of my more published articles. It was originally published in Literacy That Works. Later, it was published in Community College Week. And even later, it was published in The Magic Happens. And it's been on my websites as well. And now, without much further ado, Nick Curto. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you?
Oh, never better, Hercules. Thank God the weather is getting better weekly. And spring is sprung, and I can't wait for a little bit warmer weather. But we're really in good shape. for the big holiday, Easter tomorrow, and also for Passover. So altogether, it's a wonderful weekend.
Yes, it most certainly is. Can you believe it's been 6 years and 2 weeks since we first talked about Atlantis on the air?
Right. Atlantis is such an amazing subject. It hits so many levels of interest, of different areas of technology and history. It's a fascinating subject.
And we're going to continue to pursue it tonight. So I understand you have brought us people with unique perspectives, Michael Smith and Abe Thobin.
Adrian Thobin is a longtime Disclosure Network New York member. She's an excellent and very deep researcher and contributed much to our group. Michael Smith also has some very interesting perspectives on the whole subject of trying to find what's really hidden certainly in the Bimini Islands, and we're going to go into that with him. He's got quite a lot to tell, and so it's going to be quite an hour for sure.
It most certainly will, and I look forward to hearing what they have to say. Was Michael on the show once before? Because I remember you're bringing a guest that spoke about Bimini. Was that another individual?
Right. I believe, Michael, is that right? I believe that you were once on the on one of our programs. Is that right?
Well, I think I might have spoken up at one point, but I wasn't a scheduled guest.
No, you weren't a scheduled guest, but I think you did have some input in one of our programs, and I think Hercules, that's what I think you're remembering.
Yes, because I remember the expedition to Bimini, and we'll hear it again, and we will learn some more. Would you like to start with Michael or with Abe?
If it's okay, I'd like to start with Adrian. 80, okay. Which is what her friends call her, because she's got some very interesting data, and then I think that will lead to Michael and what he's been doing with a good part of his life. So could we start with 80, please?
Of course.
You bet.
Greetings, 80. How are you doing? I'm sorry I mispronounced your name.
It's okay. I'm doing wonderful, Hercules. Thank you. All right. So let me start. I actually did not know a whole lot about Atlantis, so I did some searching, and I tried to answer my own questions, such as who were the Atlanteans and where did they come from. And I'll start by flipping through a little of what I found, but wait till you hear where I ended up. Back in 360 BC, Plato had a lot to say about Atlanteans.
Yes.
He claimed they came from Salon, a place connected to a temple in Egypt. Then I ran across another who claimed through channeling the Council of Nine about 30 years ago, said the cedars called Altaeans created or seated the people there. I think her name was Phyllis Schlammer or something like that. But what I find most interesting as I went searching down this rabbit hole are five things that connected together. One is that Edgar Cayce said, the Atlantean upheaval happened about 12,000 years ago. Second is that science calculates the last magnetic pole shift happened 11,600 years ago. That's real close to Edgar Cayce's view of Atlantis's upheaval. Third is that the pole shift 11,600 years ago would have eventually made the tropical paradise of Atlantis turn to ice with this shift. Fourth is that many artist renditions show Atlantis as a massive circular city situated as its own island. If you use your imagination, some artworks show the city being shaped pretty much like a saucer UFO. Last and fifth, there was a recent chatter about these buried space arcs around the globe becoming activated. I don't know if you've heard about them, but one being in East Antarctica near Lake Vostok. If Atlantis was a massive ship and it sunk itself into the ocean before the pole shift, it would now be frozen under and located in Antarctica, but now it's heating up. I hear on March 29th, a 70-degree increase in temperature was detected along with the magnetic anomalies there by that lake, creating a heat dome where the Ark is allegedly buried. It makes me wonder if this ship or Ark is maybe the original Atlantis before the pole shift. A ship that massive sinking itself into the ocean would cause massive flooding and subsequent land upheaval, and that's exactly how the story goes. In addition, the Atlanteans were said to work with huge clusters of crystals. Have you heard of that, Hercules?
Well, there's different levels of information. Plato, when he told his account in the Critias and the Timaeus, his writings, he talked about Solon, who was a lawgiver to the ancient Athenians, and he was very respected. He went to Sais in Egypt to the Temple of Night, who was an Egyptian goddess, and the priest there told him that Atlantis had sunk like 9,000 years prior to their time, which would be like 11, 12,000 years ago. And so they gave him that information, and that did coincide with the dates that were given by subsequent seers, including, I believe, Edgar Casey. And I don't think Plato talked about the crystals, but I know that Casey and other seers have talked about the crystals. And that's a very intriguing theory about the space arc. I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, Hercules, you just had Mark and Phyllis Brinkerhoff on air, and Mark said on one of the ships he was on, had crystals all over within the ship. You know, the Atlanteans were said to be a very advanced race, so this theory I have that Atlantis is now located in what we call Antarctica may not be so far-fetched. It makes sense to me. You know, some say floods, some say volcanoes, others blame technology or military might, but what if none of that is true? What if Atlantis sunk itself, this ship, this Ark, into the ocean intentionally before the pole shift, only to rise again and become activated at this end of days we seem to be in? You know, they did that intentionally. We all know there's miles deep underground configurations that exist, and this is nothing new. So I had other little tidbits to say about Atlantis, but that was my basic theory. You know, I'll let Mike add into the Bimini Islands and all that. I have information, but I don't need to cross over that yet. Anyone else have thoughts on my theory?
Oh, yes. I have a lot of questions. Today I was I introduced the show with information technology, and I recreated the group that we had when we first did the Mythic Atlantis podcast over 6 years ago, and so I did some research today while I was putting all that together on the different theories. And I didn't look into the ones, you know, where Atlantis is still here, but there were certain clips on YouTube and certain articles I saw by doing a Google search where they did talk about Antarctica. But I'm very fascinated with the concept of a space arc. Why would the Atlanteans immerse themselves in ice? I imagine their civilization continued underneath Antarctica, and why do you think they'd be coming out now again?
Well, I believe there's a lot of civilizations that disappeared all at the same time, and there's arcs all over the place they say are being activated. You know, I'm just going by what I hear, and one other thing I hear is that there are beings in there that were, what's the right term for it, where they put you to sleep for a long time and you wake up later. It's like cryogenic, I don't know the proper term, whatever it is. Yeah, you get it. And they're in there, and they are going to wake up. So, you know, that's a really good question, because I didn't run across any information on that. All this is very, very new. But if they meant to go dormant for a while only to come about now, boy, if we need help, it's now. Let them rise.
I just want to add here that Michael Sawa has been doing a lot of research on the arcs, and there's a place in the Ukraine that mm-hmm. Michael is saying there is an arc there also, and that there is a lot of interest in finding it and getting to it. So here we go again. This is quite a subject here. We go into a lot of different directions here because it's such a vast landscape of interest and of breaking news that's coming daily, just about daily. So we're learning so much now, and we have to rethink a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it doesn't take away from anything that these beings were gods. They're big. Was it Casey said they were a race of giants, 10 to 12 feet tall, fair-haired. You know, Edward Sasch said they were, or I don't know how you pronounce his last name, a psychic said they're off Bimini. You know, other traces of their history might still be here within the people, our genetics, our DNA. There's a fair-haired race off the Canary Islands, or on the Canary Islands, the Gonches and the Berbers. And they don't even know where their origins are, and they're fair-haired, and they're unique. And so the Atlanteans must have been a pretty amazing race of people, a beautiful race of people, I would imagine.
There was
the way they're depicted.
We've touched on it a lot in previous shows, like even more recently than 12,000 years ago, in the Minoan civilization, they had flush toilets. In the Hellenistic times, they had coin dispense, the hot beverage and cold beverage machines. They had animatronic statues. They had opening and closing doors when you step on a pressure plate. They had beams that were able to burn ships trying to come and attack. So they had technology, even aside from the devices that are focused on in the Ancient Alien show and in the Ancient Astronaut or now Ancient Alien writings. There's a lot of technology that is accepted by scholars, and there are a lot of stories, mythologies, like with Crete being guarded by a giant robot, Talos, who patrolled the island, and Hephaestus on his forum on Lemnos had robotic assistants. There were a gold color, so there's a lot of technology that survived in myth, legend, and in folklore that up until recently we didn't recognize the technology. It seemed like magic, but now that we have the technology, we can see it, and we can recognize it for what it is. So there's no doubt, in my mind anyway, that there was advanced technology. There's a piece of art that they used to think was a woman looking in a mirror or a makeup thing, and it looks like it has a USB port, which, again, until we had USB ports, we didn't recognize it for that. But now, looking at it with what we know, it looks like one of those little portable computers, one of those iPads.
Oh, wow. Whoa, wow.
Yeah.
One other thing I just want to put in here before we go on is that the Smithsonian Institute, which collects, of course, day by day, week by week, year by year, new findings. And one of the complaints that I've been reading about on the internet for a few years now is that when people find that are looking skeletons with heads that are like 15, 20 times bigger than a normal human head, and bones that are again gigantic from obviously huge people, that when they submit them to the Smithsonian of all places, they seem to disappear. And I have no idea why that would be, but it seems to me as though there is an active drive to suppress information dealing with giants. I can't imagine what that's about, but I've heard numerous people say, what is going on? I wanted to just contribute that.
Oh, I know what's going on, because they don't want us to know how powerful we really are.
That's probably right on the money. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that something that they could pull that kind of information and hide it as well as they do? Anyhow, that's just a little part of the puzzle.
Yep.
Hercules, shall we go now to Michael?
Sure. Why not? Michael, do you have any questions?
Okay, Michael.
Any questions? I've got tons of questions. You want me to explain how I got involved in this?
Sure.
Absolutely, Michael. If you will, just give us a little bit of backup, your interest, and what you've been doing for many, many years on this very subject.
I happen to be born with a natural addiction to history, whatever, any kind of history. And at some time in my late teens, or early 20s possibly, somebody loaned me a book, Edgar Casey on Atlantis, which I devoured. And then I said, well, he gave all this information from the 1920s and 1940s. Why hasn't anybody found the evidence? I read every single book I could get my hands on. And on a trip to Florida, jumped over to Bimini for a couple of days just to see what the remains look like. And when I asked a native Bimini person, they almost laughed in my face. And I realized that these people have been living here for over 100 years or so, and if they don't believe it, how can anybody talk about it as a reality? So I was starting to explore the psychic abilities of certain people, and on my next trip to see a psychic, I had a little 8.5 by 10 map of Bimini, and at the end of the reading, I pulled the map out, and I said, can you tell me if there's any evidence of mankind from 10,000 years ago at this location? And that I got the information from the psychic that turned out to be true according to other great intuitives, but it also made me step into a realm of research called psychic archaeology, and I've been working on that for at least 55 years, not professionally, not for any gain or financial gain, but just collecting information to see if I could someday help somebody make a discovery that would, you know, prove the existence of Atlantis, which I believe was probably a global empire. I don't know if it covered the whole globe or just certain parts, but I think in the Plato story or the Atlantean story itself, it said that there were 5 sets of twins, and each set of twins or each person was given domain over a certain part of the empire. And I'm convinced, I'm totally sure that Bimini area, as Casey said, was the realm of Poseidon. So that's everything in a nutshell. But I've had 55 years of psychic bits of information, and I put them together sometimes, and there might be 2 or 3 people that have the same information. And well, one thing is, over a case of 8 or 10 years, I met 2 intuitive people, or got information from 2 intuitive people that said there was a generator, a working generator in that area, to the effect like an old, like put a bulb in a lamp and it's not tightly screwed in, as it vibrates, it'll go on and off if it's not tight enough. And they said that's how that generator works in the Bimini area, which I think might have something to do with the Bermuda Triangle.
I remember when I was active on the psychic scene in New York, about maybe like 50 years ago or 45 years ago, that was information that was coming out then with there's some machine that's still on in the Bermuda Triangle near Bimini. And Bimini, the information about Bimini changes. I had a Mandela effect type of experience. I remember Bimini rising, and I remember being in magazines. And then I talked about it, and nobody remembered it happening. So I encountered several souls that remembered it, too. We talked about the magazine covers and what the temple looked like and so forth. And it seems that most people don't remember that happening. The story was that it never rose, and it discredited Casey. And then it popped up again, and people started remembering the rising of the Temple of Bimini. And now there's a story going around that it was a place where sponges were kept that sank, and it was fairly modern. and people confused it for a temple. So I don't know what the current reality happens to be about Bimini.
Can I chime in here?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I spoke to somebody who had spoken to a charter boat fishing captain and said that if a storm goes through that area on the west side of Bimini, which is the ocean side of the Gulf Stream, that there were 200 or 300 columns strewn about that in a short while get covered up by sand again. So, and I think other people have reported on the same type of occurrence.
So do you think that the Atlantean civilization survived? I agree with you that it was a globe-spanning civilization. I, too, don't know if it encompassed the entire planet. But just like Western civilization today is very extensive and has influenced the world and has exerted its influence on the world in a very real way, I believe the Atlantean culture did the same in our prehistory. And I believe because of anomalous artifacts and stories that survived, that they had attained a high degree of technology, including quite possibly space flight. They most definitely had flight from the stories that are remembered. So I'm very intrigued with what more information you're able to glean about their technology. Like what type of generator did your information also yield that they used crystals in their technology?
Yeah, there's a place near Bimini where there's an abundance of crystals. But I heard that from a local native on Bimini who was also a fishing guide, you know, for pretty wealthy characters. So he was good at what he did. On my visit there in 1995, he told me numerous stories of different things connected with that legend that confirmed what psychics had told me. There was one psychic in Casadega, Florida, which is a little village full of mediums and psychics, and he told me that if you camp out at the north end of Bimini at night, you might see lights flying overhead. He said that's where they enter our dimension, which is an interesting comment.
Yeah, yes, it is.
Yeah, my whole attempt is to try to find somebody with the passion, the ways and the means and the drive and the enough contacts to be able to go down there. The information I have, it would be relatively easy for somebody to spend a little bit of money, a little bit to them at least, and confirm what psychics have told me and blow the lid off it. I also have a story about a black helicopter.
Michael, this might be a good place to, Michael, this might be a very good place to say that if there is someone in the audience who you've got their interest, how can they get in touch with you, Michael?
Well, through you, I guess, primarily just to keep, because I've been warned about some information. So if they contact you, then you can contact me.
Okay, then why don't I give my email address? And, yes, if you have anything, either a comment or a question for either Adrian or Michael or me or Hercules, I'm going to give you my email address, and you can address that to me, and I'll see who it's for, and I will give it to them. So let me give you my email address again. Here we go. NICKNYNY1, and that's the numeral 1, not O-N-E, but the numeral 1, @gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it. NICKNYNY1 @gmail.com. There you go.
Thank you. So is there any way that, like, did you hear anything about the space arcs when you were doing your research?
I guess that's directed to me. No, not at all, except for the fact, I've done some kind of, I've been lucky enough to be involved in some type of research in Britain also. And I had a photograph of a hill, and I showed it to a dynamite intuitive. And within a split second, she said, oh, there's a UFO buried there. So the thing about space arcs, I don't believe everything without question, and I don't reject anything. I just set it aside to see if it falls in line with some other stuff, and that happens to fall in line with some of the things that are coming out today. I can rattle on, but I lose track of what direction I'm going in, and I just keep talking. So I'll leave it to you to put up some more questions if you have them.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
If I could, just quickly, how many miles off the Florida coast is Bimini?
45 miles. It's only about a 20-minute flight with a small plane.
All right. Because I remember when I talked to you once, there was a land configuration I was looking for. It kind of just hung right down and off like a comma off the coast. And I said, I see something or feel something 60 miles off the coast. So I was just looking at a map of Florida, and there is a configuration like that right across from Bimini. Just interesting. I just wanted to.
So Adam, do you also use a psychic ability to receive information?
Was that for me?
Yeah, I have the ability to do that. Yeah, I have the ability to do that.
It might be very interesting to get like a bunch of people together from Disclosure Network who have gifts differing and an interest in Atlantis to see if by using everyone's knowledge base and talents, maybe we can put the puzzle together or connect the dots, as you will, in a whole new way.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I find fascinating, though, is there is gods like Poseidon. He was given a portion of that, and he had children by mortal women. And allegedly the divine portion was watered out eventually there. But did they travel off of Atlantis? They were seafaring, right?
Yes, they were seafaring, and according to the priests that Solon talked to at Sais, they had an aggressive navy. And the ancient Athenians fought against the Atlanteans and actually won a very decisive battle. And that's why the priest at Sais told Solon that the Greeks are his children. They think they have a memory that extends into the past, but they don't. And the priest at Sais had at that time very accurate records and very accurate dates for the information that they were giving to Solon. Go ahead.
Yeah. I have another question for you, Hercules. I had a vision not quite a week ago. When there was this alleged destruction of Atlantis, did it happen at night? Do you know that answer?
I don't know when it happened. My own investigations haven't yielded. It happened in a day and a night. It happened within like a 24-hour period, supposedly. It happened very suddenly. And recently there's been some indications that our planet may have been hit by a comet around that time because they found diamonds and other high-pressure minerals like in a swath over a big chunk of the globe. And these were all happened very quickly and at one time. So there was a very big disaster around that time. But still, they haven't filled in all the blanks with what that was all about. But there's enough indication to give it some validity. I can tell you from mythology, the gods and their families that we have are configured differently in different accounts. So there isn't really a consistency in the account about Atlantis. Atlas, who was a Titan, was a son of Poseidon. And Atlantis he was the first king, Atlas, and that's why it's called Atlantis. And Poseidon was the god that was honored by the Atlanteans, but Atlas had brothers, and they each had reigns on Atlantis or different sections of Atlantis, according to some. I don't know if you're into the cosmic spiritualities, but Unarius Academy of Science, they have a whole library of stuff they've channeled about Atlantis, and they have a very interesting way of looking at the whole thing, and they have a very long history mapped out about Atlantis. and they have some new information on Poseidon and very, very interesting stuff. The same show that we had Nick on over 6 years ago, we had the Unarians on as well talking about Atlantis. So
that's neat. You know, as a child, a very young child, I was fascinated by Poseidon and the statue of him holding his trident. And I was also fascinated by winged horses.
Yes.
And I just read that these two go together with Poseidon. He had winged horses that pulled his chariot. And I went, wow, it almost makes my hair stand up. You wonder what kind of connections you have. Because this vision I had a little over a week ago, it was dark, dark. And I was in the water, like the water of the ocean was almost black. A huge wave hitting the land that was already being tossed upwards. You could see the underside of the land, and there was a cypress tree on the end. And then the vision ended. But it was definitely a catastrophe that I saw in this 5 seconds of what I saw in front of my eyes. It was very strange. And I thought, wow, was that Atlantis or Lemuria or what? You know?
Wow.
You never know.
One of the books I pulled out today while I was looking through my library books in Atlantis, and again, a little synchronicity, is on indications that Atlantis or an Atlantean outpost was on Cyprus. So it's interesting we just saw a cypress tree, because Cyprus is not that far away from the Minoan and the Mycenaean civilizations.
Right. Ah, just amazing. I was also interested in what Mike said about them having twins. Was that you, or did Mike bring that up? About them having families.
I think it was the story that there were five sets of twins born, and they were given domain over different areas. Let me throw another story in here. In the luck that I have, I happened to meet a woman who actually lived on Bimini for a couple of years. She was a medical intuitive, and she would travel to Britain to teach doctors how to intuitively diagnose their patients. I had no idea about her background, and I was told she was somebody who could check out or douse a certain just information I had about Bimini. And so I went to visit her in St. Pete, Florida, St. Petersburg, and she went through and confirmed the information that I had gotten from a psychic in Philadelphia, that 100 yards offshore and 15 feet down, there was a temple. Okay, so she went into another room, came back with a piece of, like, cement that looked between the size of a quarter or a half dollar. And I didn't know what it was. I said, oh, that's interesting. You know, what is it? She says, oh, that was from a chip from a column found on the beach at Bimini. Okay, so a few years go by, and I go to see another psychic in St. Petersburg who currently is in California, but incredibly expensive at this point. I paid the nominal fee at that time. And I asked him about this chip. And he said, you know, gee, this is there's a really good energy around it. I think he said it was from a building used for healing. And then he says, don't freak out if you see a vision. And I said, well, I'm so interested, I don't think I'll freak out, but I also don't think I'm going to see a vision. I don't have that ability. But he held the chip in his hand, and I believe he put it on his, either he started in his solar plexus, then his heart, and then his third eye, or the reverse direction. As he was doing that, and I have this on a recording, I say to him, your face is changing right in front of my eyes. And the feeling and the impression I got by what I saw was that it was when we see the drawings of Neptune or Poseidon. That's the impression I got. So that convinced me that that was Casey's land of Poseidon.
Well, if you are in possession of this piece, you know, you might say you're not psychic, but if you hold it, you know, even before you go to sleep, take it with you and ask to either have a dream or a vision or information about it. You never, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I think they call it psychometry.
You don't live that far away. Maybe I'll bring it up and let you check it out.
That'd be interesting.
You know, there's documents out there that somebody I know has, and there was an alien that was interviewed this was in the military, you know, military documents from way back. And he said, well, if you don't think we were here long ago, he goes, go take a look at such and such an island. I forgot where it was. I can find out later. But he says, you're going to find cement pillars there where we landed our ships, you know, spaceships. And it was this very distant island. And he says, well, gosh, I don't live too far from there. And he took a boat out. He indeed found huge cement pillars all over the place. And that was long, long before cement was even a thought.
Was that in the Bahamas?
No. I'm going to find out the information and give it to Nick. I actually know how to access those documents. So it was an interesting interview with an alien. And they're said to be real. Yeah. So
Michael was nice. Go ahead.
No, cement is an ancient thing. It's older than Rome, apparently.
Yes, cement is real. Mary Jo had spoken about the antiquity of cement and how different types of cements were used for some of the statues that we have today, that they weren't actually carved out of marble. They were molded. So it's very ancient. And Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, there were polyhedrons that aren't found naturally in their composition.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Yeah, that just adds to the mystery. They're answers, but they're not. Boy, I would like to, like we say, connect the dots. We're working on it.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of dots out there. We're finding out that we connect the dots, and then, holy cow, there's a whole lot more dots right up ahead. This has been 21 years of that, and we're not stopping at all. Also, you know, we do 2 Zoom meetings a month now, and we've been doing that ever since COVID hit, because we couldn't go to our rented room in the East Village and meet there. So Disclosure Network New York meets on a Zoom level, and we certainly can pursue this topic in that level also and get a few more people involved in that. Also, just to let you know that for the whole summer, because so many people have been kind of cooped up because they had to, we're going to do a whole series of picnics in Central Park. And some of these picnics will have themes, and I can't think of a more interesting topic than researching Atlantis as one of the topics we could discuss in the beautiful Central Park right behind the Metropolitan Museum of Art. So, we're going to do a series of picnics, at least 2 a month, which is pretty ambitious for the entire summer. So we'll put the ads out about what the dates are for that.
Well, that
and,
sounds like fun.
I brought the show back monthly, so we're going to be covering it monthly, and then we have panels on Zoom as well. So there will be an Atlantis panel. Like, I have a number of people who are going to be involved with that, so you're welcome, both of you, or all 3 of you, are welcome to join that one as well. And speaking about panels, Nick, are you free tomorrow for the panel, or you're passing on it?
Unfortunately, tomorrow I can't do that particular panel. I would have loved to have been there along with for that ride, but sorry, but I can't do that particular panel.
Understood. No problem.
But I want to certainly review it when we when the recording gets published. I want to certainly hear that particular program for sure.
That is fantastic, and you most certainly will. It is a very interesting topic, and over the years, although the angle in which the problem was viewed has shifted, a lot of information has emerged. Some of the information is tantalizing and agrees with other information, and sometimes it contradicts, but the conversation has been ongoing since Plato first shared the story in antiquity, and that testifies to its strength in our psyches and the longing inside of us for an original birthplace for humanity that it seems to answer. and it has given birth to a lot of speculation, and this has enriched everybody who's gone on that particular treasure hunt in whatever capacity, whether through books, through watching programs, or by doing what the folks on tonight's show have been doing, is directly confronting the questions and trying to find answers themselves. I'm curious, when were you first interested in Atlantis? What sparked that within both of you?
For me, it was when I got the book, Edgar Casey on Atlantis. And I just read it casually and then wondered why nobody had gone, because the island's only like 2 to 3 miles long and about 100 yards wide at certain places. So there's not a lot of places to hide it. So I couldn't figure out. And then I said, well, I'll make a game out of this, and I'll do all the reading and research. And what really was the key that opened the door was when I went to see a psychic in Philly and pulled out that little map and said, where are the things located? And she just started tapping on the map, said, what you're looking for is right here. And then I had some of her information confirmed by the medical intuitive that it was a 100 yards offshore and 15 feet down, and that lady had an impeccable reputation for working with scientists. She was studied at the Stanford Research Institute because of her gifts. And she also worked with Arthur M. Young because he was so interested in her gifts. So that's the level of the source that I kind of would dream of having.
Wow. Adrian, how about you?
To me? Well, I've always been interested in the Greek mythology, Greek gods. I'm full-blooded Greek, so all my ancestors are Greek. And from Mytilene and Mykonos.
Oh, wow.
So I'm second generation born in America. So, you know, all the stories we heard were told.
Have you been there? Have you been to those areas where your ancestors came from?
No, I would love to go, though. But
I just want to recommend at some point when you can, I highly recommend you do that. I've done things like that with my family, and it is one of those things I'll never regret doing. It was quite phenomenal. So just a little hint here. Think about putting that on your list of things to do.
Oh, yeah. I would absolutely love to go when things really free up. So, yeah, you know, when you're growing up, things that were fairy tales and mythology are actually fact. That's
mm-hmm.
what really fascinates me now. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely true. And, boy, it just gets – the more you know, the more you want to know. That's how it – Michael said the same thing, that it just opens up one door that opens up another. Michael, I can imagine when you get two psychics looking at your map and pointing to the same general area and saying, take a look in that. That must be a thrill for you.
I wish I had the gift, but the thrill will be when that person steps forward with a blank check, or they say they're going to take on the responsibility of finding the... But the thing is, there's a lot of hints out there, a lot of comments where, you know, maybe certain organizations don't want things to be found. You know, so it's...
No,
but I've got the story about the black helicopter at Bimini, too, so I'll maybe leave that for another time.
Yes, because we're right at the end of our show today. We have enough time for people to share their contact information and a quick last thought. So, Nick, I'll let you coordinate that.
Okay. Again, they can reach me by my email address, and that is nicknyny1@gmail.com, and I would give you a prompt response. Also, I want to just mention that we do have a website, dnny.info, and that's for Disclosure Network New York. So just simply dnny.info, and you'll get right in.
Thank you very much. Do either of you have a last thought you'd like to leave us with?
I do. I think we are all ready for disclosure. Publicly has been called disclosure is 5,000, 10,000-year-old news. The real disclosure is us and who we are. And it's time, if whoever's listening out there, it's time. It's either game over or game on. That's all I have to say.
Well said, Adrian. Well said.
And Michael,
thank
you. Do
you
have
Michael?
Any last words?
Well, just one thing that popped in my head was Edgar Casey said that around this time, a lot of the Atlanteans are being reborn. And I just hope they come back with a little bit more knowledge than what it was that set off the destruction, say, 10,000 years ago, 20,000 years ago, or 50,000 years ago, according to the Casey timeline.
I think they call them the star seeds.
Atlantis is a mirror in which we can see ourselves. And, yes, they're called star seeds. I've been running the Olympian Star Seeds Initiative for decades. Part of its purpose is to help people remember and take action, because we need to take action now so that we don't repeat the mistakes from the past. And on that note, thank you all very much. This was excellent. You're, of course, invited to come back. Mythic Atlantis is now monthly, and there will be a panel. So there'll be plenty of opportunity to talk here. And from what I understand, from what I hear, Nick has plenty of opportunities at the Disclosure Network. So there'll be lots of conversations going. And I look forward to hearing where everyone is. And part of this show with the new format is to share some thoughts, to talk to people who are investigating, and also to review things. Because Atlantis has permeated our popular culture, so I'll close on a quick review. Since Plato first penned his foundational works, many a tale-teller has spun a fantastic yarn of long-ago times and set it in ancient Atlantis. One of the most recent was a television series that explored the lost continent through the lens of Greek mythology. Epic heroes like Jason and Hercules, along with historical figures like Pythagoras, adventure in a land not unlike mythic Minoan Crete, and revisit the classical legends. Though unseen, Poseidon is all-powerful and forever present. Alas, the series was not renewed for a third season, which is unfortunate as it was leading to the voyage of the Argo. But the two-season adventure is now immortalized on Blu-ray, DVD, and through streaming. Last episode, or last segment more appropriately, we talked a little bit about the Earth Bowl, which is the first episode. The second episode, I'll just give you a little description of it. It's called A Girl by Any Other Name, in which Jason discovers that he's originally from Atlantis and that he has a destiny that others can foresee. While seeking answers, he rescues Medusa from maenads and satyrs, which are real on Atlantis. Although freed, she's cursed by a dying Baynad, and in time becomes the monster that we know through myth and legend. Thanks again to everybody. I look forward to the next time we speak. I wish all a wonderful holiday who are observing, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Mike, Nick and Hercules.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, guys. You were terrific guests, and for connecting the dots, we wish you all an enlightened journey as you connect the dots to seek truth. So next time, keep informed, stay healthy and safe, and be very, very kind to one another. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye, everybody. We're going to close with Golden Bough, which is a mythical song by Virginia Ackley. What path do I feel?
open bow. Lady of Moon.